Last Sunday evening, you may recall that we were thinking of how all true and living faith expresses itself in different ways in different people. Underneath, of course, there is the basic, fundamental reality of faith. Faith that saves you. Faith that justifies you and sets you right with God. The faith that will get you to heaven when you die. But that basic, fundamental faith expresses itself in different ways and in different people. And you see this very vividly in the three patriarchs mentioned in Hebrews 11, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. For Abraham, faith was a faith that dared and adventured and took risks. We read in verse 8, by faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance, obeyed. And that was the great adventure of faith. And that was how faith expressed itself in his life. For Abraham's son Isaac, faith was a faith that rested. Because Isaac was a less colorful person than Abraham. Isaac did no great work. He was a man who took few risks. He simply rested on the faith that had been handed down to him from his father Abraham. And there's nothing wrong with that. For Isaac's son Jacob, the expression was very different, because Jacob was a much more colorful and vivid personality than his father Isaac. Jacob was the supplanter or the deceiver, and his was a faith that wrestled with God. Unless you bless me, I will not let you go, he said as he struggled with the angel of the covenant at Peniel. And in these three men, you find an adventuring faith, a resting faith, and a wrestling faith. And these are all authentic realities, and they are all outward expressions. They are sacramental expressions of a true and a living faith in God. And they are all expressions of what the New Testament calls the obedience of faith. Because faith does not simply trust in God. Faith obeys God. Abraham's obedience emerged as adventuring. Isaac's obedience emerged as resting, and Jacob's obedience emerged as wrestling with God. The obedience of faith manifests itself in different ways in different people. It was the obedience of faith that took James Gilmore to Mongolia. It was the obedience of faith that took Hudson Taylor to China. It was the obedience of faith that took Henry Martin to Persia. And it was the obedience of faith that took Amy Carmichael to India. Faith's obedience expresses itself in different ways and in different people. And that same theme is continued here this evening in the verses that we read. And before we come to the supper, I'd like to speak about another two kinds of ways in which faith expresses itself. First of all, in faith's detachment. And I mean a spirit of detachment from things and from possessions and even from your own flesh and blood. And you see here one of the first problems in Abraham's life. Because right at the very start of his pilgrimage to the land of Canaan, he was burdened and held back by his relatives. God said to him, leave this place, leave your flesh and blood, leave your kindred, and I will take you to a land. But Abraham took his father, and then he took his nephew Lot, and he took his possessions and his cattle, and he set off from Ur of the Chaldees and moved a few miles up the Mesopotamian valley and was stuck in a place called Haran. He was burdened and held back by relatives. I wonder if you've ever thought it strange and significant that so little is said of the relatives of great men in Scripture. Did you know, for example, that Paul had a nephew? We know this from Acts chapter 23 and verse 16, where his nephew is mentioned, the son of Paul's sister. But nothing more is heard of the sister, or indeed of the nephew, and Paul never mentions his father or his mother. Isn't that strange? Peter's wife's mother lay sick of a fever, we read in the Gospels. So he had a wife and a mother-in-law, but he never mentions his wife or his mother-in-law again. James and John were the sons of Zebedee, but after their call to service, Zebedee is mentioned no more. Don't you think that a strange thing? Jesus, at the age of 30, set his face to a life of service and of sacrifice. And one day in a crowded house, the message reached him, your mother and your brothers and your sisters are looking for you. And Jesus said, my brothers and sisters are those who do the will of God. Paul, Peter, James and John and Jesus set themselves above the claims of mere flesh and blood. It wasn't that they despised family ties or the natural bonds that hold us together in the bundle of life. It was simply that being men of faith and being men of faith's detachment, they wished to confess to the world that there are deeper and stronger bonds which transcend the bonds of flesh and blood. And right at the start of his pilgrimage, Abraham was saddled with the family bonds, which in fact held him back at the start of his life's true mission. You find this in Genesis chapter 12. Very familiar words, the call of Abraham. Genesis chapter 12, and at verse 1, now the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country, Babylon, and from your kindred, your nation, and from your father's house, your relatives, to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you, make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you I will curse. And by you all the families of the earth shall bless themselves. Now, the indicative words there in verse 1 are from your country, from your kindred, and from your father's house. But that's not the start of the story. If you look back to the end of chapter 11 and at verse 31, Terah, that's Abraham's father, Terah took Abraham, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth from Ur of the Chaldeans into the land of Canaan, to go into the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, which is just slightly up the Mesopotamian valley, they settled there. The days of Terah, Abraham's father, were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, there's a little difficulty in reconciling these two passages, but what I believe is this, that they all set out from Ur of the Chaldees, and it was only when Terah, his father, died at Haran that Abraham got moving. And much later on, you recall, Abraham had to separate from Lot, his nephew, who settled in the valley of the Dead Sea, because Lot had fundamentally no interest in his uncle's faith and work. And I believe that the final separation from Terah and from Lot, father and from the nephew, really liberated Abraham to be the man that God meant him to be. I wonder if there's any Christian here tonight who is wrongly tied to home and to relatives. Are you being hindered in your Christian progress because you are in some kind of bondage to flesh and blood? A bondage that you haven't had the faith or the courage to transcend and rise above. You see, there is a detachment in faith. And it's not coldness. It's not indifference. It's not callousness. It's not heartlessness. It is a holy separation for Christ and the gospel's sake. Abraham was liberated when Terah died and he separated from Lot. Now, I know that this is easier for some Christians than others. If you come from a rather cool family where the bonds are not strong, and where there is almost an insularity amongst the members of the family and not much contact, then obviously, as a Christian, you'll find it easier to rise above family ties for Jesus' sake. There are families that are less loving than others. They are the sort of families who rarely do things together. They do things independently. They seem to go their own ways. And they almost live independent lives, like islands inside the family circle. And there are, of course, other families where the members are so loving that they practically live inside each other's pockets. There's a togetherness amongst them. They love social occasions and visits and get-togethers. They're the sort of people who are always phoning each other. And it's harder for some Christians than for others to exercise a spirit of detachment. But Abraham had to learn it before he could truly be a free man in God's service. And we too must learn it. Do you know these challenging words of Jesus? Listen to them. They come from Luke's Gospel, chapter 14. Great multitudes accompanied him. He was still a popular preacher. And he turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Non potest. He cannot be my disciple." And if you are afraid of the word hate there, use the expression love less. If anyone comes to me and does not love less his father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Do you have faith's detachment in your life? Here's how Paul puts it in the great chapter on Christian detachment. It's worth reading 1 Corinthians chapter 7. He's really speaking about marriage, but it's capable of a much broader application. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 29. The indicative words in the passage are really in verse 32. He says, "I want you to be free from anxieties. I want you to live a life above anxiety. You must learn detachment." From verse 29, "I mean, brothers, that the appointed time has grown very short." The time there is the coming of Christ. History is rushing towards the second coming of Christ. "How then shall we live? I mean, brothers, the appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none." I have no experience of this. It's not my province. But Paul is saying that married people must live as if they were single. Verse 30. "And those who mourn, those who are going through grief, as though they were not mourning." You got to live above it. You got to be detached. "And those who rejoice at some secret gladness or a public gladness, how are they to rejoice? As though they were not rejoicing." You've got to live above even your joy. "And those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world, tradespeople, as though they had no dealings with it, because the form of this world, the shape of this world, the fashion of this world is passing away." And the point of it all is, I want you to be free from anxieties. and look down to verse 35. He says, now, I'm not saying this to be hard on you. I'm saying this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Faith's detachment. Secondly, there is faith's patience. And you see it in verses 11 and 12 in the long wait for the Son of Promise. Verse 11, by faith Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. And therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, because he was 100 years old, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. Not just the Jews, but the Christian church, which is the seed of Abraham. Therefore, from this one man, and him as good as dead at the age of 100, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. I've been trying to count up how many times God said to Abraham that a child would be born. I've counted 7. Perhaps there are more. The extraordinary thing is this, that the promises do not start with the promise of a son, but with Sarah's inability to have a child. God started with the impossible. And then he says, 7 times over, there will be a child. The Son of Promise is on the way. Never mind your age and ignore Sarah's age. I have spoken. And when God speaks to a Christian like that, or when God makes a promise like that to you, over against the impossible. He started with the impossible. Faith's patience claims the promise over against the impossible and the absurd. Earlier on in Hebrews, in chapter 6 and verse 12, the writer says that he hopes that his readers will become, and I quote, imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Through faith and patience inherit the promises. The patience of faith, the dogged, slogging, waiting, indefatigable, unwearying patience that holds on to the promise of God against the impossible. Until at the start of verse 21 in Genesis, first 2 verses, Sarah conceived as God had said, and she bore a child as God had promised. The disarming simplicity of it. When it all came through, after chapter after chapter after chapter of waiting, 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 Sarah conceived as God had said, and she bore a son as God had promised. And that's how it is in the Christian life. I've experienced this over and over again. Let me give you a personal intrusion. For the greater part of his life, my father never professed to be a Christian. He'd been brought up in a Christian home, Christian parents who were members of the Evangelical Union. And after I became a Christian, naturally I prayed for him and exhorted him to come to Jesus. And there were few signs that he was coming to Jesus. And since he had been an invalid for the last 10 years of his life, I was concerned. But God had said to me, "This man will be saved." And he was saved. The patience, faith, dogged, slogging, waiting, indefatigable, unwearying patience that holds on to the promise of God against the impossible. I recall the night that my father sat up in bed, and I said, "You want to sing something?" He's a good singer. He said, "Yes." And he sang a hymn from the old church hymnary. "I'm but a stranger here. Heaven is my home." It's wonderful. Faith in its patience holds on to the promise of God. And that is how it is in the Christian life. God sets an obstacle in your way and an impossibility and a handicap, and then he makes a promise that contradicts what he said. But faith goes against the obstacle, and the patience of faith holds on to the promise until one day it comes to pass. Listen to these verses about waiting for God. Exodus 14. There's no need to turn them up. Listen to these words. Exodus 14. "When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they were in great fear, because they were the meat in a sandwich. In front of them was the Red Sea and a watery grave, and behind them was the Empire of Egypt. The Egyptians were marching after them. They were in great fear. The people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us, bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Let us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness.' Moses said to the people, 'Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. And you have only to be still stand still and hud your wheat and dinna fash." Now that is the patience of faith. Listen to these words from Isaiah 49:23. Listen to them. 49:23. "Then you will know that I am the Lord. these great words. Those who wait for me shall not be put to shame. Stand still. Had your wished. Dinna fash. Those who wait for me shall not be put to shame. Abraham and Sarah waited for 25 years for the child. Well, these words. Isaiah 64 and 4. Listen. From of old, no one has heard or perceived by the ear, no eye has seen a God apart from thee. These great words. Who works for those who wait for him. He works for those who wait for him. Frederick W. Faber, a great Christian hymn writer, puts it like this. We must wait for God long, meekly, in the wind and wet, like that. In the wind and wet, in the thunder and lightning, in the cold and in the dark. Wait. And he will come. He never comes to those who do not wait. That's a great insight. He never comes to those who do not wait. There's a detachment in faith. It rises above the ties of flesh and blood. There is a patience in faith, and it waits and waits and waits until the promise against the impossible comes true. Amen. May God bless the preaching of his word.